Hello and welcome to the show. This is the Ash Backwards Podcast, a free-form podcast about relevant sports topics. I'm Evan Ash. Today is Sunday, April 2nd, 2017. Follow me on Twitter at AshBackwardsPod. Email me at evanpodcast15@gmail.com. Like the Facebook page. Check out the show on YouTube. This podcast is on Podomatic.com, the Podomatic app, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, and Google Play Music. So, joining me today is Eric Meyer. Eric, say hello to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
All right. So a whole half a dozen listeners or whoever, we get to talk to them today. And it's a very special occasion, certainly special for me, as it is opening day, sort of, Major League Baseball. So, Eric. Yeah. So, are you excited? You got the game on.
I'm very excited, and I'm about to turn the game on as soon as I find my remote.
Oh. Okay. Well, right now the Yankees and the Rays are playing down in St. Petersburg. They installed a new field at the Trop. It looks great. The old field was kind of dark, and it looked like it was always wet, like it was dark and light spots and stuff. This turf looks incredible, but I mean,
yeah. That's good because that wasn't the best looking field for its entire run since they put that stadium up.
Oh yeah, I mean it looks as good as it can look for indoor baseball. I did take a visit down to the Trop last spring. And it was interesting. It's like going to a basketball game. Like, I'm not used to going to a baseball game. You walk inside of a building where the door closes behind you, and like it was cold in there too. Even though it was Florida in the springtime, it was like 80 something degrees outside. But we're sitting in the upper deck. What's that? Alrighty. Mm-hmm. Alright. Score is TV 1, Eric 0 on that.
Alright, well, that's cool.
TV's about to score again. Eric, are you there?
Yeah, I just had to turn my TV down so that, now we're thoroughly muted so I can communicate effectively.
Alrighty. I guess we can keep going. So, I'm certainly looking forward to watching the Orioles. What are you looking forward to this season? What are you feeling? What are your first impressions now that there's been half an inning in the Major League season so far?
I'm looking forward to watching the O's. I think that the Statner projections are again underestimating our team and overestimating the Rays, but hey, that's pretty much same story of the year. I don't really have a whole lot of compelling thoughts. It kind of feels like, I know it sounds dumb to say that there won't be any surprises because, well, of course you don't think there's going to be any surprises because that wouldn't be surprises, but it kind of feels like the teams that are set to contend this year are kind of just the redux of last year's contenders, which, I don't have a problem with. But, it's just, I feel like if you're looking for a breakout team, I'm not sure you're going to find it this year.
Yeah, I was going through the whole league, I guess about an hour ago, and looking, trying to see, like, what team is going to surprise me and all this kind of stuff, and, like, nobody really stood out to me. Like, I went through what I think the standings are going to be, and, like, it, and then I compared it to last year, and there's only a couple minor changes, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose just, like, I'm just thinking about, like, teams like the Indians last year, who just kind of came out of nowhere. World Series. And, you know, typically teams like that, you know, they're oftentimes like maybe a one-year wonder. But now these Indians look like they're probably the best team in the American League. And I think they've got to be the favorite to, you know, return to the World Series.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, favorite to return to the World Series out of the, certainly out of the American League. I mean, they talk about in basketball, Albert, there was a rematch of the finals. I mean, we might be looking at a rematch of the World Series next year. It's like, I mean, the Cubs are loaded. Like, they just, there are plenty of good teams in the National League, but nobody, I don't know that anybody's going to hang with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the Cubs are, they're built to contend for a long time because they've got, you know, such a core of young players, you know, with Brian Rizzo, Russell and Baez, and along with some marquee free agents like John Lester that they signed a couple years ago, or well, Jake Arrieta, obviously we know about him, they got him in a trade. You know, and it's just, it feels like, I mean, that's what happens when you're led by Theo Epstein, though. You know, the guy knows how to put together a team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, they're, all their good players are, at least their position players, are all so young. Like, they won't hit free agency for 4 or 5 years. And then the team has plenty of money, so they can afford to keep the team together once the guys hit free agency.
Yeah, then they'll probably find some other studs in the draft or, you know, some other trades to restock their young, cheaper talent along with their, middle-aged, expensive talent. Kind of like how they're doing it right now because they shelled out the big money for the John Lesters and other people like that, but Rizzo's cheap, Brian's cheap. And, hey, they even last year they did that little basically an accounting trick basically to keep and give them an extra year of team control for Brian where they didn't let him play for the first like week and a half of the season.
Oh yeah, yeah. They'll do all that kind of stuff, and so they'll be good for a long time. Something I heard this past week. The Cubs, after not winning the World Series for 108 years, they look to be they're trying to be the first National League team to be back-to-back champions since the Big Red Machine in the 70s. And they're the only back-to-back National League champion or World Series champion out of the National League, I think since the Cubs did it in 1907 and 1908.
That's pretty great. You know, except within some of the great franchises from the National League, bigger than, like the Cardinals would have repeated at some point.
Yeah, they've only won 12 championships.
Yeah. So that's pretty wild. You don't really expect to see that, but you know, with the Cubs, just the way they're built, you know, all this junk about the Cubs are cursed. You know, that's just an excuse for what was previously mostly bad management, bad play. You know, if you get the right people in there to do their job, you know, if you got the smartest guy in the room, chances are, I don't care where you're playing, whether you have Billy Joe curses or Babe Ruth curses or whatever, you're going to win some games.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree. You have to have the right people because, like, I mean, people continually make bad decisions for decades. And, you know, every now and then the team will get good and then they blow it. Like, apparently in the late 60s, the Cubs were about to play the Orioles in the World Series. And the Cubs couldn't close down the stretch. And Orioles ended up playing the Mets and losing. And then in the 80s, the Cubs had a 2-0 lead on the Padres, and they figured out how not to win that series and go to the World Series. And that apparently that's what got the people to put lights at Wrigley Field because the TV people were like, we can't have dead games in the postseason if we can help it. So they put some lights in. I know there's been a lot of changes at Wrigley Field this offseason that I've been closely following on Twitter. How do you feel about the bullpens at Wrigley going under the bleachers?
The bullpens before were on the field, am I right?
Yes.
Yeah, I've never been a big fan of the bullpens being on the field. So, like, but on the other hand, it's really field. How much do you really want to change? So it's kind of like your, it's like practicality versus, you know, tradition, and it kind of makes you say, hey, do I like this or not? So, I mean, I guess I'm kind of conflicted, but I think, you know, just purely from baseball perspective, I think the best thing is to have the bullpens off the field.
Oh, yeah. I think for, I mean, player safety and stuff. Like, say you're running after a fly ball that's going into foul territory as a corner outfielder, and then all of a sudden there's this mound, like, in the... I mean, they should at least have them out of play, right? Like, they can be over there, but they can be walled off in the corner, which is, I feel like, what they should do with it. They put them under the bleachers so you can get the sense you'll barely be able to see who's warming up and stuff, but there's... We have these things called TVs now, so you can just look.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no need for bullpens in that situation because, you know, they're on camera. We can see them.
Yeah, like you get.
These are already, you know, already giving up a bunch of runs, making errors.
Right. Yeah. The Yankees are now losing 1-0. So, like, at Wrigley, they took the bullpens out and put some brand new expensive seats down the lines. So I think it's such that might be the Steve Bartman seat isn't against the wall anymore. Like, there's more seats in front of it. And then we already mentioned the Rays' new field surface. It looks shiny. I guess that's enough yammering. Let's get to the Orioles. I have the roster in front of me. And I guess, well, what do you think of the outfielders? There's Kim, Jones, Smith, Gentry, and Rickard. I'm surprised that both Gentry and Rickard are here. What I want to know from you, Eric, the Mariners fan, what is the deal with Seth Smith? Because I'm getting a real... I'm starting to feel kind of Travis Snyder-y about him, and that's not good.
Travis Snyder, you know, I think, wasn't Travis Snyder a Rule 5 guy?
No.
Oh, he wasn't?
No.
Okay, well, you know, yeah, but Travis Snyder was bad, but Seth Smith is actually, you know, actually has some value. He's not a great defender, you know.
He's not?
He can hit. He's a very good hitter against right-handed pitching.
Okay. And
so if you platoon him with somebody like maybe Rickard, who is a better hitter against, you know, right or left-handed pitching, then there could be some value there. I mean, last year he pretty much played full time last year, and he still had a very good season at the plate, or a pretty good season at least, even when he was hitting lefties, who he's not great against. So I mean, if the Orioles use him properly, they'll get some decent value out of him at the plate, even if they.
Okay, well that's good. I mean, it's hard to be as bad or worse than Travis Snyder.
I think much more highly of Seth Smith. I think that's actually a pretty decent addition to the team.
Okay, all right. And then I've been reading like box scores and stuff. Gentry, he's been flying all over the place, getting triples and stealing bases and stuff.
So he's kind of like last year's version of like Joey Rickard.
Yeah, and with Joey Rickard going to be sitting on the bench beside him.
I don't know. It's kind of strange to have both of them on the roster, because, I mean, Rickard's a Rule 5 guy.
He was Rule 5 last year. He can be sent to Triple A.
Yeah, and he was, decent. He had a nice spring, and then he made the team. Based purely on that spring, we had a nice start to the season, and then, you know, really came back down to, you know, earth.
Yeah,
and
he got hurt at the end of the year.
He got hurt. He's not a very good defender. He strikes out a ton for a guy who doesn't have any power.
Really?
You know, he's just, to be frank, I don't think Joey Rickard's, you know, I don't think he has any value in this team.
Okay. He's just in the Royal Farms commercials.
Yeah, exactly. to Kim, who did, you know, nothing in the spring.
Literally nothing.
During the season.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Kim, if Buck lets him hit against left-handed pitching, I mean, it seems like he's kind of protecting him and stuff, but if Buck lets Kim hit against left-handed pitching, maybe we'll have a everyday leadoff guy. So who do you think should bat leadoff? Should it be Smith, or should it be Kim, or Rickard,
I think it's got to be Kim.
Okay.
Kim's the best on-base percentage guy on the team. You know, it's not like Joey Rickard is some elite base stealer. Seth Smith isn't either.
Yeah.
You know, Smith's more of a, like, I guess for Smith, assuming he's, you know, batting against, you know, strictly right-handed pitching, you know, he's either a two-hitter or maybe a six-hitter or something like that. He gets on base a decent rate. He is for some power, but he's not like a middle-of-the-order stud.
Okay.
You know, he's not, you know, but, the problem is, you know, I think that the ideal spot for Manny in the order is in the second spot.
I agree.
And, you know, but we have, it seems like we almost have too many, two hitters, the way things are going. Like Seth Smith also seems like a two hitter type.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Manny can hit in the three spot, but I prefer him in the two spot. And I think the most valuable place for Manny is batting second. Because then, especially, I mean, Manny could be all right in the three spot as long as Jones isn't leading off.
Oh, yeah.
And that's really the big issue, because with Jones and, you know, whoever's batting second, I guess Kim was batting second, but you got to have on-base guys in front of the shot.
Yes.
They have Manny coming up with, you know, nobody on and two outs all the time, and then he's forced to try to, you know, do something extra because, you know, if he draws a walk, that's not going to improve your chances of scoring runs with two outs, you know, with, you know, Davis or whoever following him. So, I mean,
mm-hmm.
And like, if you look at the splits, Manny's numbers when he wasn't batting third last year were MVP level. His offensive numbers dipped in the second half of the year, and it's very much correlated with when he started batting third. And also, when he started batting third, he stopped drawing walks. Like, he went back to 20-year-old Machado with no plate discipline versus the guy we saw the previous year and a half who was taking pitches, drawing some walks, working counts, and he
mm-hmm.
kind of started, you know, swinging for the fences almost all the time, almost because he had to, because the only way you're going to get anything done when there's nobody on in two outs is if you get a home run or a double or something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the only way this team scores is by hitting the ball over the fence with nobody on base.
Yeah, the only guy that can, you know, really break that trend Manny, and you know, because he's a guy that's shown that he can be disciplined, he can get on base, and you know, do the doubles thing.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, yeah, or 2015, he actually stole some bases last year. That was just a mirage. I don't think they ever seen
Manny
steal bases anymore.
He really bulked up too, like he's all muscly and stuff. When he first came up, he was kind of skinny ish. I mean, Manny's still a large man, so. Like, I mean, but he's bigger now.
I don't need Manny to steal bases, you know. If he's gonna bulk up and that's gonna add, you know, a few points to his slugging percentage or make him a more reliable hitter, you know, then I'm all for that. Versus, you know, him maybe stealing 20 bags a year. You know, I don't need Manny to steal bases. We're not a base stealing team as it is.
Oh no.
Trumbo, like, I remember, like, last July, Trumbo was like tied for the team lead stolen bases with like two.
Where was he going?
We had like 14 stolen bases at the All-Star break. You know, and most guys have one guy on their team that has more than that by themselves. So the Orioles are not. And I'm okay with not stealing bases because, you know,
we're in scoring position at home plate, right? Like with these guys who mash in this lineup, we're scoring position at home plate. What do you need to? You need to steal any bases for.
Yeah, when you have a bunch of guys that hit doubles and home runs all day, it's not going to make much of a difference if you're on first or second.
Yeah.
You're going to score. And that's kind of the way the stolen bases is kind of a dying art because, you know, it's people are realizing it's not that valuable, especially if guys are getting guns, you know, 30% of the time. You're not getting much out of the stolen base at that point because. much more costly than the 90 feet is benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. The infield, infield's pretty straightforward. Davis, Scope, Machado, Hardy, and Ryan Flaherty. And then we've got newcomer Wellington Castillo at catcher, along with Caleb Joseph. I think Wellington Castillo is going to be a good addition to this club. I think it's good that Caleb is the backup as we await the arrival of Chance Sisko, who was just raking in spring training. Like every couple days, you get an alert, Chance Sisko, 3-run home run. Like, oh my goodness.
Caleb
needs to work on his defense.
Yeah, that's why, you know, it was a lot of times with, you know, Dan Duquette, it's like the dude doesn't plan or anything. Like, he doesn't just draw up, like, a 5-year plan for the team. And this is one of the few occasions where I was like, wow, he actually seems like he has something out here. Because Wieters is a free agent. And we kind of, we're willing to let Wieters walk. You know, he's over 30. You know, his power, his bat had declined significantly. His catching ability was dropping off since his arm injury. He wasn't as effective throwing people out. He had just lost a little bit defensively. And it was pretty obvious that Sisko's, he's the heir apparent,
yeah,
you know, as the captain. But he's not major league ready quite yet. You don't want to rush him, especially at that position where there's so much demand defensively. You got to make sure that he's, you know, he's ready to come up as a catcher. I'm not worried about his bat, but, you know, he's got to be able to come up and be able to catch.
Yeah.
And so this was a smart move to get to find a decent free agent who can replace Wieters, probably give you a little more for a couple of years, and then when Sisko's ready to come up, then you can plug him in and get your, you know, 3 years of cheap talent out of him.
Yeah.
And then Wellington can, you know, if he plays well enough, he can go enjoy a nice fat deal with somebody else. If not, well, good luck. But, you know, it's definitely a good addition for the present. It was a nice addition that doesn't compromise the future or, you know, overload a set of position like that. But, you know, it was a good, solid, smart, not a big splash, but just a good, solid move that keeps us in a good position at that position for now and for the next few years.
Yeah, I think so, too. Really, really good signing right there. What I've heard, what about Castillo's defense? Like, I keep hearing about his blocking balls in the dirt is fundamentally unsound. Like, I saw during the World Baseball Classic, there was a ball in the dirt to his right, and instead of, like, getting on his knees and sliding to his right, he kept his feet where they were, and then tried to backhand the ball, and it got away.
Yeah, it sounds like how I used to catch on occasions where they stuck me back. There's a left-handed catcher.
Ooh.
That can a little weak. And I had no fun. I was behind the plate blocking. And I just reached for everything because I wasn't in a position to actually move my feet. I was sitting on my heels. So, I mean, I don't know about that.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger concern I've heard with Castillo is he's not a very good pitch framer.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. You know, but apparently he's improving that. But the way I see it, you know, this isn't going to sound encouraging at all, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
How much pitch framing do our pitchers need? We're not talking about guys. We're talking about guys who either just miss everywhere or they just throw meatballs.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
This is our staff. We're not talking about a precision, Greg Maddux type of pitching staff here. We're talking about Ubaldo Jimenez.
Just a bunch of throwers.
You know, I mean, how many guys do you see, like, on an 0-0 count, just blow a fastball right on the outside corner on our team?
No, nobody does that.
If we go, we can do it, but it's not what our team does.
Right.
So, I mean, how much is pitch framing really going to make a difference, you know, for the Orioles? I mean, obviously it matters, but I don't think it's as critical given that our pitching staff is not great and certainly not precise.
Yeah, we our pitchers just kind of throw it toward home plate. They either can't find the zone, or when they do find the zone, they find way too much of the zone. And since the team plays 81 games at Camden Yards, where it's 364 to left center, sounds like a lot of home runs. So we talked about the catchers. What about, I was surprised to see there are two DHs on the roster. We have Trumbo and Trey Mancini.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that because, I mean, I guess I get it because Mancini had a very good spring hitting. But, you know, you just shelled out for Trumbo. You know, you just gave him a 3-year deal. You know, and to me, that was, like, I realized that Trumbo's price came down dramatically because nobody was willing to pay him what, $80 million that he wanted.
Yeah.
You know, 4-year deal just because he had one nice year at Camden Yards where he couldn't actually play defense. Dirty little secret from Mark Trumbo's 47 home run campaign last year. Yeah, that's great, but you only batted 250, you never drew a walk, and you were terrible in the outfield. So, you know, you were that valuable, and nobody's going to shell out for a guy whose career year was, you know, the equivalent of an average player. So, I mean, I get it, you know, you want to keep your guys, I guess, especially guys that do things like hit 47 home runs, but, and even though his price came down, it just felt like it's just not a good idea to pay that guy a bunch of money, or even a little bit of money, when you have somebody like Mancini who looks like he's major league ready to come in and take a job.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess you could say that, but, like, I don't know that Mancini, like, I don't know for sure Mancini's major league ready. Like, he came up last year toward the end of the season and played maybe, I think, 12 games.
Something like that.
Didn't he come up from Double A also? Like, he's never even been to Triple A.
Yeah,
Well, Manny came up from Double A, too.
Yeah, but Manny's different. I mean, that's obviously a concern. But, I mean, just based on what he's done this spring and...
Well, Jake Fox had 12 home runs in spring training in 2011.
Yeah, but, you know, there's still, you know, expectations versus, you know, performance. And Jake Fox was not expected to be good, and he was. Mancini's got a little bit more, you know, he's got a little more potential, I
ability.
Think.
Yeah.
Fox did. So, I mean, I guess I'm a little surprised. Having two DHs on the roster is just redundant. I mean, there's how hurt is Mark Trumbo going to get not playing the field? You know, so yeah. It's not like you have to worry about, oh, Trumbo's going to get hurt because he's swinging too hard. I mean, come on. And, you know, I honestly think...
I think their backup DH is Pedro Alvarez.
Yeah, I think Trey Mancini, the best thing for him would be to learn how to play a position.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, you're not going to have... I don't like seeing young players sit there and say, hey, I'm coming up to the show for the first time, but I can't play any defense. Like, I get it when you're older, like when you're in your 30s and you want a DH.
Like Vladimir Guerrero that year.
Yeah, or even Mark Trumbo, who's like, okay, I played first base for most of my career in Anaheim, in Arizona. Then I kind of played outfield and I wasn't very good at it here. So let's have me DH. But if you're coming up, like, if you're planning to play baseball, like, for a living,
mm-hmm.
I think you need to be able to play defense.
Oh, yeah. Like Jimmy Paredes.
Yeah, like what is that? Like, come on. Like, it's just, and I don't know what Mancini's defensive profile is. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine it's great if he's being put as a DH, but, you know, learn a position, man. Like, and the big problem is, though, the place that you hire players that don't play defense is first base, and we've already got Davis over there for...
Signed him for 10,000 years.
Davis over there. Davis is obviously a very good defender for
first
base.
He is good.
But, you know, it's difficult when we seem to have these all-offense, no-defense type of guys. You can't hide them everywhere. You can't stick them in the outfield. We saw what happened with Trumbo.
No,
and
right.
Even outside of Baltimore, we saw what happened with Andrew Ramirez.
Oh, my goodness.
Was
he was terrible.
Season in the history of baseball.
Really?
And what do you know? They move him to first base, and the defensive problems go away because he's playing first base.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of the big issue is we have guys that can only seem to play first base. Trumbo can only play first base. You know, I don't want Davis playing somewhere other than first base because he's actually good at first base.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Trey Mancini seems like he can only play first base. So it's kind of frustrating. That's why I'm hoping, like with Chance Sisko, the concern about him is his defense. And I hope he can become a very good defensive catcher because we can't afford to have another guy that we're playing the DH.
Oh, right. Yeah. Like, I feel like what the Orioles really need is to have 9 guys who play the field and then 9 more guys who bat. So they have, you know, all 9 DHs and then 9 fielders, and they just keep swapping back and forth whether they're on offense or defense.
Yeah, it'd be like football style or something.
But yeah, that would really work for this team. Like,
yeah, because we got so many guys that can, we got guys that can field like Flash, and I guess Paul Yonish is back in the system. Paul Yonish. He can be my designated guy, you know, third baseman or something, or shortstop or whatever.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, because we don't have many guys that can actually play both ways. I mean, we got Scope to an extent, obviously Manny Jones. I mean, other than that, man, Hardy can field, but his bat's declined. So, I mean, it's kind of, you know, we don't have too many guys that are above average on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, that certainly helps with his teammates. Guess let's get into the pitchers. So Kevin Gausman, the opening day starter, how do you feel about him on opening day?
I mean, he pitched well in the spring, but you know, we know what that means. But it means a whole lot of nothing. But we've always liked Gausman's potential, but I mean, it almost feels like he's at that point where I'm done saying this is the year, you know, because at some point it's never going to be the year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that he's not good. You know, I'm not saying that, because last year, he had a nice finish the last year, and he proved to be an above-average starter for the Orioles, as did Tillman.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are hoping that he's going to be, like, a staff ace, like, all-star type of pitcher. And he could do that. He's got the potential to do that. But it's been too long at this point for me to say with confidence, this is the year, or that's the year. He's going to have to show it, you know, for me to buy in. Because last year he was a full-time starter last year. Like, before, he was being jerked around between minors and majors. It was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but last year, he was, you know, all systems were go.
Yeah.
And, you know, he started off decently up and down. Still threw too many 0-2 fastballs down the middle. Like, I hit out of the park.
Yeah.
But he had to finish. And we know he's got good stuff. So we'll see what happens. I think, as far as opening day starter goes, he's the best pitcher on the roster that's healthy. So, you know, there you go. I mean, that's the way it works. And I think he's going to do fine. But, you know, obviously, I don't know. We play the Blue Jays.
Yes.
So, I guess, who they have? Is it Sanchez? Or?
I think it's Sanchez.
Okay, well, then, you know, I just said that, you know, a pit, like, we'd be the underdog in that pitching matchup as far as I'm concerned. But not by much. I think
I lost
some credit.
I mean, it's not like when the Orioles go up to Toronto and face Roy Halladay and score 0 runs every time.
Yeah, well, starting, you know, from Rodrigo Lopez or something. Oh, boy. Bruce Shedd.
I mean, we can go down the list of terrible opening day starters. I mean, there's Kevin Millwood. You remember him? He was the one highlight of the Orioles that season. What was it, 2010, 2009? I mean,
yeah, he was a nice pitcher for the Indians for a while, like a nice little 2 or 3 starter. You know, nothing wrong with that, but
oh yeah,
yeah, it's definitely not somebody you want to crank out opening day. That's bad.
We had Jake Arrieta starting opening day once.
Yeah, well, that sounds like that nowadays. Well,
yeah, he won the Cy Young Award. Well, you know, not really. I know I mentioned on here before how is that one of Jake Arrieta starts and he gave up 9 runs in 3 innings. And the Orioles did come back and get it to 9-6, but we lost to the Phillies. Yeah, Jake Arrieta out there just grooving it in there like, come on. So let's see. We talked about what about Bundy? How are you feeling on him? Because I mean he's such an unknown. Like he's been having so many surgeries and stuff. We don't know anything about this guy.
Yeah, like last year, coming out of the bullpen, he looks decent. And then he moved to the starting rotation, and he looked like, you know, like he was the next Jim Palmer or something for the first, like, 5 or 6 starts.
Yeah.
But then it seemed like people started figuring him out a little bit. Maybe he started to get a little bit of fatigue since he wasn't prepared to, you know, start, what, 30 games a year.
Mm-hmm.
Or really any games. The only reason he was on the roster was because he was out of options.
Right.
He signed a major league contract out of the draft, you know, so they couldn't really expect him to sit there and, you know, not do that because, you know, given he was picked early on. But, you know, it's just like, okay, you got to stick this guy on the roster or else you give him up.
Yeah.
And obviously, you didn't do that. So, I mean, with Bundy, though, it's like, we know he's got good stuff, but he had a bad spring. And it kind of carried over from the end of his last year. You know, so I was kind of excited for the top three of the rotation with Tillman, whatever he's, but then Tillman got hurt with Gausman and Bundy. I figured, okay, these are three, you know, above average pitchers. And, you know, obviously Tillman's hurt. Gausman, I think I got some faith in Gausman to do pretty well. But now Bundy's looking like he's a big question mark. I was kind of looking forward to seeing him possibly take that next step to becoming whatever ace we thought Gausman would be. Maybe Bundy could kind of step up and become something similar to that, but I don't think, I can't say with confidence he's going to do that. I got to see more from him.
Yeah, I need to see a little more from Bundy, too, because, I mean, it's just, like, his...
There's no
case. Like, right, we yeah. We just don't know anything about this guy. We don't have enough information as it stands right now to really form an opinion on whether he's good or bad.
Yeah, it's true. So, and we'll see how that goes. Obviously, like, Bundy, you know, as the third starter, I think would be, you know, the perfect place for him. Unfortunately, he's going to have to step up and be the second starter.
Yeah.
Mullen's back, and who knows what's going on with him. So, that's... It's a bit of, you know, losing Tillman is a killer, not just because it's not like, oh no, we lost our best pitcher. Well, no, it's more like, oh no, you have nobody to replace this guy because
now you don't have any other good pitchers.
Your other two pitchers move up, but when you have no pitching depth at all whatsoever, you're going from having two guys that can instantly lose you a game to now having three guys that can instantly lose you a game in rotation. Bad enough for Miley and Jimenez. Now we're adding Tyler Wilson or Mike Wright.
Mike Wright's not on the roster, thankfully.
I'm speaking like in general for the year, you know, because if Tyler Wilson or whoever is the fifth guy, and once he starts getting bombed, Mike Wright's gonna be the first guy called up, and then he's gonna get bombed.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of a scary situation, and the Orioles have weathered the storm with bad pitching. Because they play, you know, good infield defense and they hit a ton of home runs. But, you know, you got to figure eventually this is going to catch up to the Orioles having these bad rotations year after year after year and these incomplete lineups with, you know, that lack certain skills where you have to hit home runs to win games.
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, the way this team is built, like, there's going to be more wins 10-9 than there are 2-1.
No, absolutely.
So,
yeah,
I mean,
that's
just what we do.
The case every time.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like if you're a pitcher on this team and your ERA is under 4, you're doing really well. I mean, we don't need a guy to have a 1.5 ERA or something like that. Just keep it under 4, maybe 4.2 or something like that. And should be good enough.
Yeah, that would be fine. Just you got to consider also not just the offense that we have, but you know the ballpark we play. You know that's not exactly a pitcher friendly park.
No.
So and a lot of the parks they play in on the road aren't pitcher friendly. Toronto's not pitcher friendly. New York's not pitcher friendly. The only one in the division that is Tampa Bay. And
I mean, it's not super pitcher friendly down there either. It's just that they pitch so well that makes it pitcher friendly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a cavern by any means. It's just compared to the other four band boxes in the division, but compared to that, it probably leans towards pitcher friendly. But obviously, it's not like San Francisco or San Diego or Safeco Field, Seattle.
Oh yeah.
It's not just like that, but it's But even so, like I said, as long as we can, not get bombed.
Right.
And, keep it to 4 to 5 runs allowed per game, then we're going to win some games.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Like, going back to the pitcher-friendly versus not pitcher-friendly stadium, I've been to Philly before, and, you walk around in there, and everything seems really cramped and small and tight. Concourses are low ceilings and lots of exposed ductwork and exposed beams and stuff. And then, you come down here to the Braves' former home at Turner Field, and, this place is enormous. It just keeps going and going and going. You kind of get a feel for, even as a fan, not even as a guy who may or may not be giving up home runs, as to whether it's pitcher friendly or not. Do you want to go around the? We're already 40 some minutes in. You want to go around the league? So I guess let's start in the American League East. What are you kind of projecting as how the American League East is going to play out?
Obviously, I think Boston's got to be the favorite. They just continue to
spend lots of money.
They shell out money, but then they also, you got to give credit to the Chris Sale trade. Getting him, that's just wild. And they gave him their best prospect for him, but And the thing about Sale is he's pretty cheap, for the next couple of years. So they get 2 or 3 cheap years out of Chris Sale for $10 million for that. For a guy that, has consistently contended for Cy Youngs over the course of the last 5 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And to still be that good. And plus, David Price is injured, but they figured he's going to have him back. But that rotation's looking pretty good. And just, again, another team that they built through the draft. People talk about the Red Sox, they spend all this money. And, they spend a lot of money. But
they have good young players with Bradley and Bogarts and somebody else, Mookie Betts.
Yeah, you can afford to whiff on, Pablo Sandoval, for what, $19 million a year.
Apparently he's lost 50 pounds or something.
Yeah, and you can, but you can, even when he wasn't, and he was breaking his belt, it's just, when you've got Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley Jr., Xander Bogaerts, all these dudes, they hadn't even reached arbitration yet, and they were all-stars. Mookie Betts was an MVP candidate. Jackie Bradley had, that crazy 28-game hit streak, and Xander Bogaerts had a nice season. That's three, borderline superstars that are making a combined, $2 million.
Yeah. They specialize in killing the Orioles. Like Mookie Betts last year. Why are we still pitching to this guy?
He had 5 home runs in 2 innings. I was there for one of those games where he just kept lighting up Mike Wright. I was like, let's just take him out of the game. Get somebody else up there to pitch to him.
Getting Mike Wright up. I do remember Mike Wright's first start, though. Didn't he pitch 7 shutout innings or something against the Angels? It was the Pujols and Trout and those guys. And then he's been pretty bad ever since.
Yeah, reality kind of came back to him. And the thing is, there are guys that are easy to root for even though they're not good. Mike Wright's not one of those guys. he's a guy where it's he runs his mouth even though he's not good at his job. It's come on, dude. He talks smack about Edward Encarnacion after Encarnacion lit him up during the game. I'm like, well, what are you doing? I don't understand. I understand doing it before the game and then having to eat your words, but after he got smoked.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Eric, you used to pitch. You ever give up a couple of bombs and then talk some trash about the other team afterwards? Is that, I mean, you know, does that make sense, right? Obviously, that's what you do.
If I was ever pitching against a team or of players that were good enough to take me yard multiple times in the game, because I don't think I ever gave up more than one home run in a game. I really give them home runs. But if I was getting toasted in general, home runs or not, you know, I knew it was because the other team was pretty good. You know, the only bad games I had were either I was playing a team that was way too good for my level, or I was just walking people because I couldn't. I never got lit up by average teams. I don't know that. I would say, look at that good. I just had a bad day. That never happened. You know, because why would I talk smack about that? If they can hit my pitching, then they're obviously pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly better than me, you know. So I can't sit there and say, hey, you know, you guys aren't that good. You know, you guys just got lucky. You can't get lucky hitting the ball over the fence. You know, that doesn't happen. You have to hit the crap out of the ball to hit it out of the park.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's not like it just bounced in somewhere, like a flare or something. No, if you hit the ball over the fence, it's because you're better than the pitcher on that at bat.
Yeah, I agree with that. Speaking of balls going over the fence, Evan Longoria just hit a home run. It's now 5-2 Tampa Bay over the Yankees.
A high-scoring affair.
Yeah, well, Tanaka gave up 3 runs in the first inning. And then, then Archer went out there in the second inning and gave up 2. So now it's the bottom of the second inning, and Tanaka, I think, walked the guy. And then Longoria came up and hit the ball, hit a home run, like in that little cutout in the, down the left field line.
I've seen that part.
Yeah. It landed on top of the wall and bounced over. So 5-2 Tampa Bay. What about the rest of the East? How do you think that's going to play out?
Let's see. I think Toronto's going to regress. Just because they lost a lot of talent. You know, I mean, they lost Encarnacion.
They can't pitch either.
I feel like their window is really kind of starting to close because they're relying on guys like, you know, Jose Bautista to, you know, find the fountain of youth or something. Bautista can't stay healthy and he's not as reliable at the plate anymore.
He keeps getting punched in the face. Don't forget that.
Yeah, and he had to. I mean, he was looking for a big fat deal, and he had to go back to Toronto basically with his tail between his legs, you know, like, because nobody really wanted to pay this dude a bunch of money. And I don't know why we did. You can't say that it's because he's a jerk. No, it's because he's just not that good anymore. I mean, he's not the all-star MVP caliber player that he was for, like, 4 or 5 years between 2010 and 2014.
Oh, yeah. Bautista wanted, I think, 6 years, $150 million, is what
he's
he was
like
asking 36. For. Yes, he is 36, but that's what he was asking for, 6 years, $150 million.
Well, that's more than that explains why he couldn't find a team. You know, that's not a realistic expectation for an aging outfielder that's not fast and gets hurt a lot.
Yeah. I mean, didn't he? And, like, not only gets hurt a lot, but hurts himself, too. Like, remember there was some type of beef. Or as we're playing in Toronto, and Bautista's trying to, he throws the ball to first base from right field and hurts his arm and has to come out of the game. He was out for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, he's got an injury prone, he's gotten older. So, with Toronto, I feel like, again, they went all out at the trade deadline in 2015 when they got to Lewinsky, when they got David Price.
Yeah,
you know,
that almost worked,
and,
too. I mean, they were good.
You can't say it was a bad move because they made 2 straight, you know, championship series, but, you know, it's just they didn't capitalize on their window, and that window seems like it's starting to close.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like they're going to compete for a wild card spot, but I don't think they're going to challenge the Red Sox at top of the division.
Yeah, I mean, Toronto, they were a team, they hadn't been to the playoffs in over 20 years. Like, since Joe Carter's home run landed, they didn't go back to the playoffs until they went with David Price and Tulo and those guys.
Yeah, because they had the longest streak before they went on the Mariners. So,
yay. Well, I mean, only to be topped by the Buffalo Bills, who haven't made the playoffs this century.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. But yeah, I get it with Toronto. And the other three teams, obviously, the Orioles are so uncertain.
Right.
You know, because they...
It's like, if this guy's good, and if this guy isn't bad, and if this, and if that, and if the weather warms up sooner.
Guys that we expect to pan out never do, and then guys that we didn't think anything of have career seasons. Like, you know, like Nelson Cruz 3 years ago. All of a sudden, Chris Davis is a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
57 or 53 home runs or whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, where did this come from? There's always seems to be some surprise out of left field that keeps the Orioles relevant, even when their roster looks like it's not that great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, hopefully we get it together. And then Tampa Bay, you think they're going to be in last place, even though they look like they're going to be in first place in a couple hours.
After beating on the Yankees. Tampa's that team that always gets more credit than they deserve, just because they've got decent pitching. They can't hit, you know, I realize that pitching might win your postseason series, but...
You got to get to the postseason.
Yeah, and you're not going to get to the postseason playing 162 games if you can't hit. And, you know, as a team, they can't hit. And they buy into these rental type of players, like Nick Franklin, who I showed you that tweet when he said something along the lines of, he's going to be the next Ben Zobrist, and then they cut him.
Oh, yeah,
you
got it.
That's how they build their team. Whenever they get anybody, you know, worth noting, they end up having to trade them because they don't pay them or something like that. There's not a good organization.
Well, they don't have any money.
Yeah, I mean, that's
why important. They can't compete, because they don't have any money.
Yeah, it's impossible to compete in baseball if you don't have money. I realize that it's doable, but it's only doable for small windows, and then you have to give it up for 5 years or 10 years, and then your next, you know, batch of players, prospects or whatever that come up are actually really good, and then you've got about 2 or 3 year window, and then it's, you know, it's impossible to stay good if you don't pay money to players.
Okay. I mean, they signed Longoria long term, they signed Archer long term, and they signed, I know I told you about this, they signed Kiermaier long term, who's ridiculous, just, especially with the way the Orioles hit the ball, it's all high and arching and stuff. Feel like said, I mean, our guy's got to hit the weight room to make sure it goes way over the fence. Kiermaier's going to bring it back every time.
Yeah, I remember seeing there's one home run robbery he had against Manny where Manny hit a straight like line drive shot, but Kiermaier was playing so deep because he loves to rob home runs at Camden Yards. He even said so, but like, he loves playing there because it's so easy to rob home runs there. You know, and he was playing so deep that he ran back and he robbed a line drive where you never see that. The ones that get robbed are typically the moon shots that are wall scrapers over the fence, because that gives the outfielder time to get back there and make the jump. But this one, it was a straight rip, and he was already back there, and he just made a, you know, phenomenal jumping catch. And I was like, really?
Mm-hmm.
This is just crazy. And I was at a game last year where I think he robbed one, and then he almost robbed another, but he turned it into a double instead of a home run. He got a double.
Yeah, with that was against Kim.
Yeah, I think I was at that game because I saw it on the ground. I was like, "Run, people, run!" But you know, but then I saw replays, and I'm like, "Yeah, I think that was going out if he didn't get his glove on that."
Oh yeah, that been a slam. What about in the Central? I don't think the AL Central's gonna go.
Yeah, I kind of said at the top of the show that, you know, I think the Indians are, you know, I think their position is getting stronger this year because, you know, they lost half their rotation to injury. I mean, Danny Salazar was their best pitcher for most of the year last year, and he ended up getting hurt. They had a couple other guys that got Trevor Bauer got hurt in the postseason with a drone accident. And so their rotation is looking stacked. They still got Andrew Miller, who surprisingly has looked terrible in his last 3 or 4. You know, outings between the World Baseball Classic.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, he was awful.
Yeah, but I mean, you got to figure Andrew Miller is good not to get it back.
Right.
So he's going to be Andrew Miller. And, you know, they've got a lot of really good young players. And, like Carlos Santana last year wasn't healthy. He's back.
Michael Brantley.
Yeah, Michael Brantley. he's back. And then they got, of course, they got Francisco Lindor, who's, you know, one of my favorite players to watch. You know, he's a lot of fun. He's a great defensive player, and he can hit. Jason Kipnis, to me, is like the ultimate, like, I don't want to say he's a glue guy, like, because that's more of a basketball term, but he's a guy that does everything really well, but does nothing great, so you don't notice him, but he's really actually one of the best players in the league because of how effective he is in all facets of the game. He can hit for power, he can get on base, he plays good defense, and he's just, he seems like a cool dude, too, so... You know, he's easy to root for, and he's fun to watch, and he has a lot of value to the team. And just all over the field, I can't really think of a weak position the Indians have. I mean, they're just a very good team. But they don't really have, like, that superstar Mike Trout or Bryce Harper, even though Lindor could be that guy in the future. But they've just got, you know, 9 really good guys along with 5 very solid pitchers and a good bullpen, and I think they're just going to roll.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the way you... Where you're talking about them, they don't have any holes, right? Like, you talk about all the teams in American League East. Like, all the American League East teams, none of them pitched all that great last year anyway.
Yeah.
Except for Tampa Bay, but they can't hit. But
yeah.
Then, now the Red Sox spent a whole bunch of money and traded people and stuff, so now they have a great rotation. But then now we go to the Indians and they're like, well, they pitch well, and oh yeah, their offense is good, and then their bullpen is good, and they play good defense. So like, what's the problem? What's missing? It doesn't sound like there's too much missing other than the rings on their fingers right now.
Yeah, that's what ESPN I think said, that gave like a 93% chance or something crazy like that to return to the postseason. I'm like, I've never heard of that for. You know, anybody other than, like, the Yankees teams from
the 90s.
The Yankees teams that had, like, all that money and all these, you know, star players. And you just don't hear about 93% chance of making the postseason. It only takes a third of the teams in the playoffs. And that's crazy. And, you know, and good for them if they make it happen. They look like they're going to be, you know, that team again.
Yeah. Yeah, I think... Definitely the Indians are going to roll. What about the rest of the Central? Do you think the Tigers will be competitive again, or what about the Royals?
The Tigers are a funky team because it seemed like they were kind of in, you know, selling mode and just ready to rebuild after, 2014. And they traded David Price. They traded, they let Max Scherzer go, too. It just seemed like it was time for them to, you know, pack in and rebuild. But then they actually had a pretty good season last year. Verlander had a resurgence. He should have won the Cy Young. I don't know what they were doing, giving to, you know, Porcello, but hey.
He pitches for Boston. That's why they gave to him. I mean,
yeah, and he didn't even have, like, Verlander had by far the most first place votes, but a couple of dopes didn't put Verlander on their ballot at all.
Guess they forgot about him or something.
Yeah, it's like, hey, if they put him on his belt, even like fifth place or something like that, he wouldn't sign up. So, you know, it was just completely ridiculous that Porcello won. But that's another story. But yeah, Verlander appears to be back to being Verlander. At least maybe not as great as he once was, but he's very much a bona fide ace.
Yes.
They still have that absolute, you know, killer of a lineup with Miggy and Ian Kinsler and Victor Martinez. Now JD Martinez is. Established himself as a constant threat, you know, to all Oriole pitching everywhere.
Especially Wei Yin Chen giving up bombs to JD Martinez.
Yeah, so their lineup is dangerous, and they've got at least a couple of good pitchers. Their bullpen, they just don't have figured that out.
Their bullpen is atrocious. Like, still.
It's been that way since 2013, ever since they blew it that series to the Red Sox. You know, in game 2, they're 5-1, and they somehow managed to lose.
Well, because their bullpen came in and started throwing BP again.
Yeah, blew 2 games in that series. Obviously, we know what the Orioles did to them. I mean, it's just embarrassed them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for as easy as it is to find relief pitching, I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not difficult to find.
Even the Orioles have relief pitchers. Like, we have so many starters that aren't any good. We have decent relief pitchers now.
Yeah, I mean, so that's the way that works. But, yeah, so the Tigers, I think they'll do all right. I can see them. It's kind of interesting with the way the new wild card thing, you know, I guess it's not that new anymore. But, you know, it really opens it up, you know, so much more than people think. Because, like, before, it used to be like they took four teams from the American League. And you'd say, okay, well, here's the four teams that are going to go. There wasn't a whole lot of competition, but that extra wild card spot really, you know, that basically puts another six teams in the mix.
Right.
Just because normally you have three dominant division winners and at least one team that was good enough to win a division, but just happened to play, like, it was Red Sox Yankees.
Right.
If the Yankees would win the division, the Red Sox would win 98 games and get the wild card.
Mm-hmm.
So that basically meant 2/3 of the rest of the league had to win.
Either win the division or just go home.
Yeah, and the other three teams in the American League East had no shot because,
right.
You know,
we didn't have any money.
They weren't catching those teams. So, but now with that extra wild card, you can get in winning 85 games.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Know, that's a legit, that's happening. You know, so, it's, and teams stay in the mix. Like, you usually have like 10 teams still vying for a playoff spot in the last week of the season nowadays. And, you know, so it's kind of, it'll be interesting to see. You know, how that goes. I think the Tigers will be one of those teams in the mix.
Oh, yeah. Well, what do you think about, I mean, after the Orioles lost the wild card game, what do you think about the wild card one game playoff type of thing? Even as an Orioles fan watching the season end in one game, like, I still really love the wild card game format because, like, that's why, it's one of the reasons football is so popular in the postseason is single elimination. You have one game, and your season comes down to this. And I also feel like, well, like the teams that said, we didn't have a fair chance in the postseason to keep our season going. I'm like, yes, you did. You had all summer to catch the division winner, and you didn't do it. So, you know.
Yeah, it's there's no such thing as a system that's going to be completely fair.
Right.
But this is sports. You know, sports it's not about fairness. If you're not first, and really, the only way that you can ensure that you're going to get a fair shake is if you come first. But that's called being a competitor.
Yeah.
You know, go out there and compete. I get it. I understand the frustrations. But I mean, a couple of years ago when the Cubs and the Pirates were the second and third best team in the National League, and they had to play in the one-game playoff. Like, I think the Pirates won, like, 98 games.
Yeah.
And they went home because they got beat by Arrieta.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get Pirates fans being frustrated. That obviously, it's unfortunate that you won 98 games and that wasn't good enough to win the division that year. But, again, I mean, you still had a chance to win.
They were playing at home in that wild card game.
Yeah, one-game playoff, sure. But it's not like that one-game playoff. The other team started with 5 runs or something.
Yeah.
You started off 0-0. You had the better record. You were at home. You should have won that game.
Yeah.
And you didn't. So.
And if they wanted to win the division so badly, I mean, they played the Cardinals 19 times that year. So if they just won one more of those games, they would have then tied for the that would have been crazy. That would have been a 3-way tie for the division.
Yeah.
99 wins.
Yeah, and again, it's not completely equitable all the time. But again, this is sports. It's not, there's no such thing as a perfect system. And,
yeah.
You know, it's like, I mean, kind of in football, I watched the Saints be the only team in history to go 13-3 and not get a first round bye.
Really?
And that cost them a chance to win a Super Bowl that year because they had to play on the road. But again, they could have won that game against the 49ers that year. So it's the same idea. It's not like they don't let you compete.
Right.
They don't keep you out. You're in. Go win. Survive in advance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. I love the wild card format.
It definitely makes things super exciting. And again,
it's really exciting if it's not my team, right?
Yeah, you know, it was terrible for us, but you know, it was probably fun for everybody else. But typically, and that Pirates Cubs situation was such an anomaly.
Yeah.
That does not happen very often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at last year's wild card teams. Two teams that didn't win 90 games. For the Orioles and the Blue Jays.
89 wins.
Yeah, they barely even deserve to be there, you know? And they played like it, and that's what happens. They lost. You know, if you want to get there, win the division.
Mm-hmm.
You know, win 95 games.
The Orioles had the division lead for 3 months. We were up by 5.5 games on the second place team, and we finished 4 games back at the end. What happened?
Yeah, they just weren't good enough.
How do you lose 9 games in the standings?
If you're not good enough, you don't get the breaks. There's no such thing as breaks for teams that finish in second place. This is baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball is not. The differences between teams is so small, especially when you boil it down to even. Like 1 game, 5 game, 7 game series, it doesn't matter. The margins are tiny. I mean, we're talking about, you know, win percentage difference between a first and a third place team is like 5%. So if you boil that down to, you know, 5, 7, 1 game, it's of course it's gonna be really random who wins.
Oh yeah, I think so. I mean that's what makes the game great though, because like, I mean, if we knew who was gonna win ahead of time, then why are we sitting there watching?
Yeah, it's like the NBA. It's like we know who's going to the finals in the NBA. It's like, okay, well then I'll watch in the finals until then, you know.
Yeah, I'll be watching something else.
Yeah.
All right, let's go out west in the American League. What do you like up there?
I mean, I think the Rangers are still really good. You know, the Astros have had some pieces, and obviously the Mariners are appearing like they're finally. And I say this, you know,
being a lifelong Mariners fan,
with surprising levels of confidence, they finally look like they're ready to actually be good when they're supposed to be good. You know, it just doesn't happen. Every time the Mariners have a good year, everybody says, "Oh, this is really going to be great." And then, you know, they find a way to mess it up. Robinson Cano has a stomach virus for 3 months or something crazy like that.
Ooh.
You know, it's just they find new ways to lose, but. This year, again, it feels like all hands seem like they're on deck. And, you know, they actually made some moves. The new general manager is actually doing a good job for once. My entire life as a Mariners man, I've just watched people, you know, trade away prospects for aging hitters that can't hit.
Or prospects for pitchers who are terrible.
Yeah, who have bad attitudes, too.
Mm-hmm. I think he's out of the league.
Yeah, he's been out of the league for a few years now. But I like the Mariners. I think the West has a real good shot of having both wild cards with the way the Mariners and the Astros look. And I think the Rangers are obviously going to be. I'm just really impressed with the Rangers, how they've stayed good. You know, since they had their really bad World Series loss. 2011, like you would think that would just be it for that group of players. I realize that not all of them are the same. You know, Rougned Odor wasn't around for that. There's plenty of other guys that, but Elvis Andrews and Adrian Beltre were.
Mm-hmm.
And they've stayed, you know, relatively in the mix even without, you know.
You Darvish had Tommy John surgery 1 year.
Yeah, he's been good, but he's been hurt a lot. They still managed to stay afloat with what looks like unimpressive pitching. But the difference between them and the Orioles is their unimpressive pitching actually does pretty well. Ours stinks, but we make up for it with a bullpen and other things.
Right.
Yeah, so the Rangers are actually good at baseball. The Orioles are mostly smoke and mirrors.
Yeah. What about the Astros?
You know, I like them a lot, obviously. You know, Carlos Correa, he gets on my nerves a little bit.
Really?
You know, just because
he booted that ball against the Royals a couple years ago.
Oh yeah, that was awesome. But you know, just all the crazy hype this kid gets, and you know, he's really good. But you know, people act like he's going to win the MVP. Like they said last year, he's going to be better than Manny Machado. I'm like, well, no, come on. So, but you know, obviously he's really good. Altuve's great. You know, they've got a really good young team down there, and if Dallas Keuchel can have a bounce back here. And be, you know, a legit ace again. You want Cy Young. I really think that I think I think pretty highly of them too. So, you know, it's just gonna be. I think it's gonna be really interesting seeing how this sort of new-ish Rangers Astros rivalry it's gonna develop, because last year the Rangers just constantly beat the Astros.
Oh yeah, like I mean, it was like the Indians and the Tigers from last year. I think the Indians won. What I think maybe 13 out of 18 or something.
Like yeah,
one of
them. Last year the Rangers won the first like 7 or 8.
Oh.
And like one of the Astros pitchers, I forget who it was, talked a whole bunch of smack about the Rangers, saying, "Oh, it's gonna stop. You know, we're gonna stop it. This is enough's enough." And he goes out and he gets toasted. It's kind of cool because, you know, those teams don't really have a historic rivalry, because for most of their time they were playing separate leagues.
Yeah.
Now they're in the division, and pretty much as soon as the Astros came into the division, now they're contending, and the Ravens are, or not the Ravens, the Rangers are contending.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're, so it's like almost like immediately this is actually clicking as a rivalry. It's kind of crazy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, when the Rangers came from D.C. in the 70s, had they always been terrible, essentially, until their back-to-back American League championships in 2010-2011?
Yeah. Yeah, because they were the second 70s team that lasted, like,
10 years. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they came, the Rangers didn't do squat for, you know, 3 decades, even though they've had some, you know, impressive star power with Hud and A-Rod and other players.
Yeah.
Juan Gonzalez, you know, he won the MVP somehow. But that was kind of their first really roll in the hay was, you know, that year. And so now they're kind of just, they've stayed relevant, which is, you know, good for them.
Oh, yeah. It is hard to stay relevant. I feel like, I think the Angels and the Athletics, they're going to be bad again, aren't they?
Like, yeah, I mean, the Angels have Mike Trout and not much else, and them aging Albert Pujols.
Aging?
Yeah.
Aged.
He's
aged.
Albert Pujols with like another, what, 5 years left on his
$250 million contract?
Yeah, so that's. And I still say there's no way the Angels would have offered Albert Pujols that contract if they had any idea that Mike Trout would be as good as he is.
Oh, yeah.
Guys, like, it was that year. That was Pujols' first year in Anaheim. And that was Mike Trout's, you know, basically rookie year. And he had come up, he came up in 2011 and did a little bit of stuff, but, you know, he was still a rookie in 2012. Like it's my role. And he comes out and he's the best player in baseball as soon as he starts playing baseball, you know,
yeah.
So. Yeah, but I think that contract, and just that team's just not built for success. I mean, they're not good. They have no pitching. They've got a bunch of junk ballers that the Orioles can't hit, but, you know, other people can.
Yeah.
You know.
I get the sense the Angels are like the Rangers from when Alex Rodriguez was there. Like, they have this one great player who wins MVPs and stuff, makes all the highlights and everything. But the rest of the team is just awful. Like,
yeah.
as a whole, the team is bad. But they have this one good guy, but everybody else is just, you can get rid of them.
Yeah, it's ugly, but, you know, I'm not complaining. You know,
yeah.
The Angels have been the bane of the Mariners' existence for, like, almost 2 decades now, so I'm perfectly happy to watch them toil in the cellar of the division for a few years.
Well, there's the Athletics down there, too.
Oh, yeah,
the cellar of this division is crowded.
Between them and the A's, those two teams just, you know, when I actually had hope as a Mariners fan, those were the two teams that were constantly just taking it from me. The A's and the Angels. You know, by the time the Rangers rose to prominence, my hope for the Mariners was gone. You know, entirely. We had Aaron Wedge as a manager at that time. We were the worst offense in history.
Yes. Well, speaking of the worst, wasn't Logan Morrison on that offense?
No, he was a little bit later.
Oh, okay.
He contributed to support that offense.
Well, you just hit a home run, so.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, whatever. But, yeah, it's just the consistent lack of offense for the that should be pretty good this year.
Yeah. All right, I want to round out our American League coverage. I agree with Eric just about everywhere. I mean, I think Red Sox are loaded, Indians are loaded, Rangers are loaded, so they'll win the divisions.
Like I said, there's not really no real surprises, especially in the American League.
Yeah. And I think the Orioles, Blue Jays, Tigers, Royals, Mariners, Astros will be competing for the wild card spots, which is great for the American League, because I mean that's everybody but six teams out of 15 that aren't going to be any good. And I didn't say the Yankees with all their money and young talent. Angels have lots of money but not lots of talent. So let's head over to the National League before we get started. Like, can you? We might have talked about this a little while ago, but can you? Is there any team that you think will surprise you out of the National League? Because the National League is so chalky and so top-heavy. Like, all the good teams are really good, and all the bad teams are really bad.
Yeah, the National League's got some really, really crummy teams, but I'm trying to think.
Anybody? Because I couldn't find anybody. Like, somebody suggested that the as their hot take or whatever, the Rockies are going to make the playoffs this year.
I think that's just people who like Nolan Arenado.
Nolan Arenado couldn't hit the side of a barn in the World Baseball Classic. Like, come on, man.
The closest thing to a surprise, and it's not really a surprise, that I can think of is the Pirates. And that's not a surprise because
they've been good for a while.
Yeah, they've been the playoffs like 4 straight years or something like that. You know, so that's not a surprise pick. Again, that's just the only thing that I can see changing is I can see the Mets potentially winning the division over the Nets.
Oh. Okay.
Well, I can see that happening just because with their pitching and the Nets, I think they lost more than people think they lost.
They have no bullpen at all. Like.
Yeah. They haven't really fixed that problem. And they lost Wilson Ramos and replaced him with our dear buddy Matt Wieters.
Georgia Tech's own Matt Wieters.
Yeah, so, I mean, and Wilson Ramos batted like 320 last year, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean.
So that really helped them a lot. And I think a lot of people with the Nats, they assume that Bryce Harper is going to bounce back and be Mr. Superman again. And I think that year in 2015 he had was the outlier, not last year. I think last year is closer to the normal Bryce Harper.
He's got the yips. Like, Joe Madden got in his head last May, and he hasn't been the same since. Like,
he just refused to pitch to him.
Yeah.
He walked him 6 times. I think they hit him once.
I can see that.
Well, because I looked at a pretty interesting stat on FanGraphs last August, because they posted a story about it, because they noticed that Harper was, relatively struggling at the plate, and they were like, okay, well, let's look at what he's doing this year compared to last year. Well, he wasn't hitting the ball as hard, and that's pretty obvious, but they also noted that last year they ran a regression on, your slugging percentage on, balls hit in the air based on how hard he actually hit, like the exit velocity off the bat, and Bryce Harper's, his performance vastly outnumbered how hard he was hitting the ball. He was getting a lot of home runs and doubles that normally should have been outs. He was getting a little bit lucky in that regard. And that last year, he came back to the beat. He was on just directly on that line. And that's a huge gap in his performance. So I think that, this last year was, or 2015 for him was just, it was a crazy season for anybody. Like, that was just unreal performance. And you have to expect some fallback from that. And another thing with Harper is, he's obviously incredibly talented. He's a great natural talent. But one, his swing mechanics aren't perfect. Like, he's pretty much relying solely on the fact that he's just a beast to the crank home runs, which, obviously can work, but at least the inconsistencies. And as long as he has those inconsistencies, there's going going to be some wiggle room. And the more important thing is, the dude gets hurt. Like, he gets banged up a lot, and it affects his ability to hit. Like, I think, well, like, 2015, his best year, he was actually healthy the whole year. Like, he missed some time, but, like, generally speaking, he was mostly healthy. Last year, he had a shoulder thing.
All right, he's running into a wall at Dodger Stadium and he's bleeding everywhere and stuff. Like, oh, okay.
And when you're getting banged up like that, it's, you can play, but you're not going to be able to, you know, just mash the ball like that, especially when your swing mechanics aren't that great. So you're just relying on pure athleticism to get the ball to go 500 feet or whatever. It's not going to be the same. And
yeah.
I think that, so I mean, obviously, I think he's a great player. I think he's going to be an all-star again. I don't think he's going to be as bad as he was last year.
Yeah.
And bad in most terms, he wasn't even that bad. But he's not going to be a transcendent superstar. At least I don't think so.
Yeah. I don't know about him either. Because, like, people would talk about all these great young players, Manny Machado and Mike Trout and Bryce Harper. And Bryce Harper seems to certainly have found himself in third place of those three.
He definitely fluctuates the most because after 2015, people were saying, is he already better than Mike Trout? And the answer was obviously no. But, you know, it was like, wow, he's actually going to get to that level. And now it's like, now people are writing stories saying, well, Manny Machado's going to be worth more money come contract time than Bryce Harper is. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's probably true. I don't like to hear that. But, you know, that's the reality, just based on the fact that, you know, the thing is, Manny, whenever Manny's been healthy, Manny's had three full healthy seasons in the major leagues. And every single one of those years, he's been an absolute superstar. He's put up 6.5 to 7 wins above replacement seasons. Every year he's been healthy. The only years that he didn't do that, he missed half a year with knee problems, or he was a rookie that came up in like August. You know, every year, bang, 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 great player, both sides of the ball, period.
Mm-hmm.
Bryce Harper, a little bit more up and down, you know. Obviously, his best year was better than Manny's best year, but his worst year, and he's
it's
got
way worse than Manny's worst year.
And Manny's consistently great. And you figure that since Manny's good in so many areas, he's great defensively and offensively. It's like, you know, you hear about it, like stock people. You want to diversify, you know, have stock in multiple things so that if one goes belly up, you're still good in somewhere else. That's kind of like it is with Manny. Like, there's less risk because if he has a bad year defensively, which he's not going to because he's Manny,
you know. Defense never goes in a slump.
Yeah, I mean, if he's going to have a hitting slump, he's got his glove.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if Harper has a hitting slump, he's an average right fielder, which doesn't carry nearly the value of an outstanding infielder.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm a huge fan of the Tony Kornheiser show, and he talks about the Nationals on there. And so their closer this year, I saw they announced, is going to be Blake Treinen. And Blake Treinen gets a lot of time on the Tony Kornheiser show for being terrible. But, like, you always hear about how good he is, but apparently he has a dynamite sinker, but that doesn't sink. Get the sense he's kind of Jim Johnson-ish.
That's not good.
No, it's not. So.
Yeah, because I've heard the name Treinen quite a few times, because I watched some NAS games, because, you know, get mass theater.
Yeah.
But. He's just, you know, he's not a guy that anybody has ever spoken of. Like, this is the heir apparent to
whoever their former closer was.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, again, how many times do you hear of guys that lose the closer job and get it back here and do it? It just doesn't happen. So, I mean,
no.
Because
Tommy Hunter was great after he wasn't closing anymore.
Yeah, well, yeah, but he didn't become a closer again. That's what I mean. But yeah, that's the thing with the Nats again. Their bullpen's not great. Their team, they've got some talent. Obviously, Trey Turner's gonna be great.
Yeah.
And obviously Bryce Harper's, you know, as much as I just kind of rained on his parade, he's obviously still an all-star player.
Yeah.
I just don't think he's gonna win the MVP again. But other than that, like Max Scherzer. He's good, obviously, but and he's probably not going to miss much time with his he's going to be all right.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, but again, with Steven Strasburg, you never know because the dude gets hurt all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, the Nationals just kind of a weird team. Like, they're good. They're always, usually they're good. But, you know, sometimes they disappoint. Sometimes sometimes you can't explain why they win.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that leaves the door open for the Mets, who came on like gangbusters last year, you know, despite the ridiculous number of injuries they had.
Mm-hmm.
They managed to actually make the playoffs. They lost to Madison Bumgarner, but
that happens to everybody. Mad Bum in a winner take all game, it's over.
Lose. So, you know,
remember there was talk about the Giants bullpen is awful too. Giants closer would be in that game, and I'm like, their closer's on the mound in the first inning. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Mad Bum, he's going nine. We just know.
Yeah, I kind of got to a little bit of a Twitter argument over like that concept of, you know, who are we gonna bring in to get the save? You don't need a save. You need a win. Go out there and win the game. Put your best arm out there. Go win. I don't need a guy that gets saves. I need a guy that doesn't give up runs, and that's Bumgarner. You know, come on.
Yeah, and every now and then he knocks in some runs. So,
oh yeah.
I still feel pitchers have no business hitting, but
but it's nice to see. Like, if they're gonna do it, it's nice to see the few that actually can.
Oh yeah, I think so. I think the Marlins are gonna be kind of. So who do you think is going to be worse, the Phillies or the Braves? I think the Phillies are ahead of the Braves, so I think the Braves will be really bad again.
Well, the Phillies are actually heading in the right direction as far as building their team goes.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to say because it seems like every time, like when the Nationals were coming up, like when they were like starting to accumulate talent with Harper and Strasburg and people were saying this team's going to be great in, you know, a few years. Teams always come of age earlier than you think. Like the Cubs did last year, or in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they made the playoffs with the We Are Good shirts, everybody thought, oh, this Cubs team's going to be really good in 2 years. No, they're good now. Like they show up early and they get there. And with the Phillies, they could be a surprise team if you're looking for a surprise team. I definitely, without hesitation, put them ahead of the Braves.
Yeah.
The Braves are just a mess.
Yeah. Yep. They're going to be bad. They did win their exhibition home opener situation on Friday night against the Yankees. Up at their new park. That's not in town anymore. What about the Central? I think the Central is pretty much... I mean, the Cubs are the best team in baseball, certainly. But like the Cardinals, I mean, the Cardinals are the steadiest thing in baseball because like they've never really been bad in my memory anyway. Like they've always been like they let Albert Pujols go, who's an all time great player, and they won at least one World Series without him. Like how you let that guy leave? And still be good.
They won in 2013, they lost to the Red Sox, but...
They won the 2011 World Series.
They're always, you know, going to the playoffs, going to the NLCS. I mean, they're always in the mix. I mean, and they absolutely own the Dodgers whenever they play in the postseason. Like, that's just...
That's not even fair.
Yeah, pencil in a victory for the Cardinals against them. You know,
especially against Kershaw, who gets rocked against Cardinals. Like, he gave up 10 runs in one start. And then he's got a 2-0 lead in his next start in the same series. And he gives up a 3-run home run to big Matt Adams. And the Cardinals, or the Dodgers, lose and get eliminated.
Yeah, so that's kind of how it goes for them. But yeah, the Cardinals, they're another team, like, they kind of remind me of the Indians a little bit, where they're solid everywhere. Like, there's nobody on that team that you say, oh man, that guy's, you know, first ballot Hall of Fame stud. You know, but they're solid everywhere. They've got good young players. They've got good veteran players. They've got Yachty. They've got,
mm-hmm.
They got that hot shot kid that pitched in the World Baseball Classic for the Dominican, I think his name's Carlos Martinez.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so
I think he's starting tomorrow. Or today, tonight. They play tonight.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's good. You know, it's just a well-run organization. I mean,
absolutely.
It's impressive what the Cardinals do.
Yeah.
So you got to figure that, you know, granted, the Cubs, obviously, I'd be stunned if they don't win that division.
Oh, yeah.
But the Cardinals and the Pirates, I think, both have very strong chances of snagging a wild card. And the rest of the Central, the Brewers and the Reds, I don't even think you got to talk about them.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned the Brewers just because I was watching opening day coverage last year, and the Brewers had a home game, and the Brewers play, they have a retractable roof now, and, like, they just kept showing on the TV shots of it snowing sideways outside while the Brewers were playing. So, and then the Reds, they're going to be bad for a while. They got nothing. Tampa Bay's up on the Yankees 7-2. Tanaka, I think he gave up all of these runs. He gave up at least six. He got toasted. Let's head up west. This division, well, the whole National League, it just seems like it's the same people every year. So, I mean, I got the Dodgers winning it because they have a lot of money. The Giants will finish in second place by a couple of games. I feel like the Diamondbacks bounced back. They were just terrible. For some stupid reason, who was their idiot general manager who decided to trade Dansby Swanson, who was the number one overall pick, shortstop, who's going to be great, and who's already in a bunch of commercials here in Atlanta, for Shelby Miller, who, like, what, who was in charge of that brilliant decision?
Some of the talent they've had, you know, and especially offensively, and you figure that team would be dangerous, but they never are.
Yeah. And then the Padres, they might have been going on out there. And the Rockies, people are like, oh, the Rockies, look up at them. I'm like, no.
The Rockies can't pitch. They can't pitch, you know, on the road or at home. You know, it's hard to pitch at home, that, you know, ballpark of theirs, but.
They can't pitch at sea level either.
Nope.
Okay. Ooh. All right. So, you, Eric, do you have the Dodgers and the Giants up at the top?
Definitely. Okay. The Dodgers. I mean, again, they seem like they signed Logan Forsythe and they traded for him, which, just fell out of
the
team. It's
what
like,
position
hey,
is he?
You got somebody missing. Let's just throw a couple. $10 million this guy because hey, we can't.
We have that in the couch cushions. I mean,
yeah.
With their ownership group. Yeah. So I guess the last question before we wrap up: who do you have in the World Series and who wins, and how many games?
Well, this is gonna be the definition of boring. I'm taking the Cubs in the National League again,
mm-hmm.
And I'm taking the Indians in the American League.
Okay.
Again.
Seven games this time?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I think it goes to seven. But I think the Indians win this time.
Alright, so back-to-back years. I mean, I guess it's safe to assume the Cubs will have the better record. So they'll have home field this time.
That's right, because they scrapped the rule. But yeah, that's true. But yeah, I don't think home field matters that much in baseball. But yeah, I think it's about the pitching and who's on the mound at the right time. And I just think that, you know, I don't know. It's impossible to predict a series this far out.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're almost rooting for that because I kind of wanted the Indians to win last year. You know, I mean, I like the Cubs too, but, like.
It would have been a better story if the curse of the GOAT continues.
Yeah, and, you know, if this super talented team of Cubs had to go through all kinds of trials and tribulations, like, World Series in Game 7 after having the lead. You know, that would have been fun. But it didn't work out that way. But, you know, so we'll see what the Indians do. And the problem with the Indians, though, is that kind of been broken by the Cavs. So
yeah.
It's not. It doesn't quite have the same impact.
Doesn't have the sizzle anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I got a couple things on home field in the World Series. So the first thing, if the Cubs wanted home field in the World Series so badly, they could have had it because they had 8 guys in the All-Star game. So, you know, they could have done it that way. And then I was reading, I went on Wikipedia and looked at the box scores from the 1947 World Series. So this was the Yankees and the Dodgers with Jackie Robinson. And so apparently somebody hit a fly ball in the left field that went like 430 feet or something. And Yankee Stadium at that time had what they called Death Valley out in left center. And so it was just a can of corn fly ball, like not even to the warning track. And if that game had been at Ebbets Field, it would have been in the upper deck seats. So, you know, it kind of depends a little bit. I think the Dodgers, like Jackie Robinson played like 4 or 5 World Series, only won one. I kept losing to the Yankees. So my World Series pick, I'm going all chalk this time. I've got the Cubs. I have the Red Sox. So I have the Cubs beating the Red Sox in 7 games in an old-timey ballpark thriller. Should be good. So we're over an hour and a half. So you have anything to add? Let's see. My phone is at 10%. So got a little symbol saying we need to wrap this puppy up. So you have anything to add before we go? Yeah, all of baseball. So, alrighty, wishing everybody a happy opening day today and tomorrow. Should be good. I got the TV on now, and I'm not going anywhere. I'm watching all of it. So I think that'll wrap up this week's show. Hope to have a new show for y'all next week. Check out the show on Podomatic.com, the Podomatic app, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, Google Play Music. Like the Facebook page. Follow me on Twitter, AshBackwardsPod. Email me, evanpodcast15@gmail.com. Check out the YouTube channel. Thank you to all the listeners. Appreciate all the feedback. So for Eric Meyer, I'm Evan Ash, and this has been the Ash Backwards Podcast. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you all next week. See you.